Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Josh Brown, there's no other way to start the week than with the wind up. I'm Scott Tilford, joined by Josh Brown.
Hello, how are you doing?
Maybe I'm shouting too much. I have no idea. This microphone is new to me, but you know, the quality is good, Josh Brown. The quality is good. It's crisp. It's peaking, which apparently is a good
thing. Listen, I don't know if that's true. Although nobody else can see this, but I can see it. I can see where you're podcasting from. And it looks like a very professional swish time, Scott.
I'm
in my house with Joe Pesci behind me. You are being the professional today and holding
him all the way into to what will eventually be the fully complete What Culture offices, but we're getting there bit by bit. And we've got a nice little podcast studio. So if this audio sounds a bit better, it's because it's in a fancy room with lots of foam on the walls and all that sort of stuff. But in true wind-up fashion, we thought we'd set you off for the week by discussing a whole bunch of games that have just dropped. So we're going to try and cover all three games there. Sable is out on Xbox and PC. There's Kena: Bridge of Spirits on PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5. And there's Death Stranding's Director's Cut on also PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 5.
Maybe
we've been living
on the director's cut on PlayStation 4.
I don't know anymore, but we've been playing the PlayStation 5 versions. Point being that games are back, or are slowly coming back. Far Cry 6 is out in a week or two, and it feels like there are a lot of worthwhile stuff. I've also been playing a lot of Lost Judgment, which is a brilliant game, but I've only done the sort of first hour or so of that, and Tales of Arise as well, just all sorts of different games. And don't let me let you forget about Big Rumble Boxing the Creed Champions either, because that's in there as well, don't you worry. But I thought we would start with Sable, because Sable multiple times has made me think that this is an easy Game of the Year contender. I think the thing that I really don't like about it is the performance. It runs like absolute hell on Xbox, and I'm playing on Series X, which makes me think that it's even more unacceptable. But I know that me and you have been, we've messaged each other a few times as we were playing it. But what's your general thoughts, and I guess what do you come down on the performance debate?
Well, this is it, man. Like, I don't think we can talk about Sable without being upfront about how it actually plays. And for me, it's been an incredibly disappointing game. Definitely, man. To get this game that, as you know, I've mentioned on this podcast numerous times how much I've been looking forward to it. It was one of the games that I got an Xbox for so quickly so I could play this and also
An Ori?
And I've not heard of that. What's that? I might have to check that out, maybe. If it's on Game Pass, I might try it. But like, jumping into it, you know, it's immediately apparent that the game just isn't where it should be, even on Series X, because like you said, you know, the frame rate just tanks at times, even in low demand areas. There's a very noticeable stutter, but once you get out into the world, or once you get out into some of the more densely populated areas, like, that thing just drops and it tanks. And it's such a shame, because everything else about it is so immaculate. Like, it's one of the most good looking games I've seen. Like, visually it's spectacular, the music is great, the writing is surprisingly strong and emotional and deep, and it sucks because, you know, I'm playing it and I'm knowing that I'm not getting as much out of it as I would be if it was running smoothly, and if the big moments weren't being interrupted by this dodgy frame rate and a few bugs I've encountered as well. And it's such a shame, because I'm sure we'll get into, you know, there's so much of it that just is immaculate.
Well, that's the thing. Like, weirdly as well, they, as an artistic decision, they have a sort of drop frame way that Sable and the various characters run around the world anyway. They sort of drop a frame every now and then to make it look a bit more like a flip book kind of style, which I really, really like. The thing is with the performance, because it is just like massive amounts of dropped frames. Like, it is like, it's literally single digits sometimes, like to the point where it's hanging for a second or two and then continuing again. And it happens all the time. And I've seen the developers have acknowledged this. They more addressed the PC version, but they did say that they were aware of the performance issues, and assumedly a patch will be coming ASAP. So I guess I don't want to dwell on it too much. And also, like, the performance side of it, like, it is in there. Like, you do notice it quite frequently. But because of how good and how sublime the game is, I did, like, you know, unless it was right in front of me and the game was hanging for a second, I could just get lost in that world. And the reason that I think it's one of the, you know, it is up there with the Game of the Year contender, and I know you can say, lol, 2021's games, everything is up there as a Game of the Year contender. But still, Sable's thing for me, it nails that lush sense of maximizing a 3D environment that Breath of the Wild did. And yeah. There's a lot of Breath of the Wild in it. It feels a lot like, because there's a lot of, like, for me, a lot of, like, Eastern influences in there as well. A lot of it reminds me of almost Mass Effect's take using the Quarians to do, like, a comment on various, like, Eastern cultures and Eastern religions. And I feel like that's in here too. Because we haven't even said what the game is, which is literally you are playing a Sable. You're part of a group called the Ibexai, or they're like the Ibexes or whatever. Yeah. And they're a group of sort of nomads who go out on different pilgrimages, and you can spend as long as you want on your pilgrimage trying to find different pieces of knowledge or whatever you want to get from that pilgrimage. And then you go to someone called the Mask Maker, and you give them different badges that you found, and then the Mask Maker will make you a mask. And you can end the game after you have any of the masks, I think. But that's you choosing whatever path you'd like to be. You get badges based on traders, on different people that you encounter, different quests that you might have done. So you're kind of choosing what personality you want to have. And it's all one giant metaphor, at least to me, of sort of that whole thing of, like, venturing outside of your particular religion that maybe you've been brought up with, or the way that you were when you were a child, and sort of going out into the real world, realizing who you want to be, feeding some of that information back into the original community, but also realizing who you are in the process. And that's the thing that I absolutely love about it. That's the stuff that really excels and elevates it for me. And, like, you know, getting lost and all that, like, you have the Breath of the Wild style exploration, but the thematics, you mentioned the writing, there's just so much going on that is so lush and drinkable. You can just take it all in. Like, I played it all yesterday, or as much of yesterday as I could across my Sunday, and I'm loving it.
Totally, man. It's such an emotional game, even outside of the writing and the way it's presenting this journey. You know, like you said, Sable's on this thing called the gliding, where, you know, she goes out and she's, it's like you said, essentially trying to figure out who she is, what she wants to be, what her future holds. And I like the kind of tentativeness of the opening. You know, we're not going to spoil too much here, but obviously the opening is when you're with the rest of your nomads, the people that Sable has grown up with, and you're kind of, like, saying your goodbyes. And it's such an emotional moment where you do say that goodbye and she does go off on her
little
own.
Little grandma at the camp wishing you well. Like, oh, yeah, that's my grandma, that. Like, just,
exactly. So easy to, you know, implant your own relatives and friends and family members and stuff onto these characters, and then you're off on your own and you're figuring out who you want to be. And the way it rolls that stuff out is so gorgeous and so relatable that I just think it absolutely nails its thematic drive, at least from the few hours I've played of it so far. And that kind of angle isn't necessarily unique for a game, but I struggle to remember it feeling so potent and so you know, full of kind of, like, life and character. You know, you really feel like, even though you only get, like, an hour with the nomads at the beginning, you feel like you've known them your entire life. You feel like you're in Sable's shoes going out for the first time, and how scary and how big it is, because when the world opens up, the world is big and it is intimidating. You've got these, you know, lush grand structures that you're encouraged to explore, but they're big, they're not dangerous, but they're difficult. They're huge kind of things that you have to climb and master, and you have to understand the world. And, you know, learning that alongside Sable so far has just been a total joy.
So that's the thing that I wanted to mention before when I said it reminds me of Breath of the Wild. In regards to, for me, Breath of the Wild was a reminder of how much video games and the medium have moved past taking advantage of a 3D space. Like, what exploring a 3D space should feel like. Like, verticality should matter. And it's not just resigned to platformers. It can be something else. And obviously, Breath of the Wild was just, here's your marker off in the distance. However you get there is up to you. And the entire open world is one big level. And I feel like so many games have tried to do that since. The likes of the game that I'm completely forgetting the name of, the one that was Immortals Fenyx Rising tried to do it, which I thought did it really, really well. And there was also The Pathless that launched with the PlayStation 5. Games that are very minimalist, that are all about taking in a big open world and just sort of learning to traverse it in a fun way that makes the open world the level itself. But there's a design ethos that's in Breath of the Wild, and I forget the name of the level designer for Breath of the Wild, but they were in an interview back in 2017 saying that they took influence from the way Disneyland is designed, which is, if you stand anywhere in Disneyland, you will be able to see, like, the biggest rides, the biggest things, the biggest focal points from anywhere in the park. So you're constantly just on a loop of, like, well, I'm going to go over there, and now I've seen three other things that I want to get to, but, oh, let me do this first and I'll go there later. And that was one of the things that made Breath of the Wild so addictive and sublime and I love that game. And so that's why I'm highlighting Sable over the likes of Immortals and The Pathless, because the level design here is, like, spot on. Like, you know, you take any peak and you can just hit, like, RB or RB, and scan the environment and sort of look out and place markers and stuff. But I've just found myself going like, well, that's like some cool looking temple, or that looks like a creature, or like that's like there's some weird like, you know, object emanating from that pile of sand. I wonder what that is, and going around. And it's just like there's no combat in it either, which I really like, because it has the Breath of the Wild climbing system where it's just a stamina system. You can get upgrades for it. But you're really just running around, climbing stuff, talking to people, and taking in like the gorgeous soundtrack, which is kind of, you know, depending on where you are. Like if you go to a camp, it'll change music, or some of the types of people you talk to have their own theme music, stuff like that. But just all of that thing of like, look how awesome a 3D space can be. I feel like so many games get caught up in set pieces and blockbuster, whatever, just sort of like, hey, look at this thing. And it's like, no, like the old school roots of 3D gaming are still beautiful and it can be done really well.
I think it's testament to just how well the world is designed and how inviting and welcoming it is that, you know, I'm only 3.5 hours-ish, 4 hours maybe into the game. And I don't think it's that long necessarily, but all of the like quote unquote main quests that I've come across at the moment, you know, there are pockets of other nomads, other tribes and stuff that you meet outside who give you focus things to do. And it's by the time I've actually got to them, I've actually already completed the quest without knowing it. So for instance, there's a wind tower early on, and that was one of the first structures I went to once you leave the tutorial area. And I kind of solved that puzzle, for instance, before meeting the person who was intended to go out and tell me. And you get like dialogue exchanges when you do that, when you do preempt it, where the people you know, react to you taking the initiative and getting there first. I really thought that was a cool wrinkle of how it changed your relationships with these people you meet along the way. And that kind of sense of, you know, curiosity that it instills in the player is, like you said, you know, what makes some of the best games ever made so good. You know, your Breath of the Wild, your old school, you know, 3D platformers and stuff. That sense of wonder, that sense of exploration, and the fact that it keeps you hooked without the need for, you know, complex mechanics or combat, like you said. It has one main thing that it wants to achieve, and it achieves it very, 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 very well. And again, you know, it's something that I went to bed last night thinking about, because I just got to this really cool, evocative location that was such a joy to climb and get to the top of. And, you know, I'm excited to get back there to see what secrets that has to offer and see what other stuff is hidden, you know, behind the desert, behind these great big mountains and stuff.
Well, that's the thing, because like the thing that I love, and it was, again, it's the feeling that I got from Breath of the Wild, where, you know, it's like, here's your stamina system, you can climb this high if you hit the wall at this angle, and it just sparks so many different ideas, and you're like, well, I bet I can scale that if I go this way and take a rest on this little outcrop, let me get some stamina back, and I'll do a bit more. And it always felt so rewarding, like conquering a mountain in Breath of the Wild. And like Sable, like I said, Immortals Phoenix Rising has that, but because of the tone of Phoenix Rising being so crazy and over the top, and Pathless is a very kinetic game, I don't think that game has climbing at all in it. But in this, it does feel like you're conquering an environment, because they lay the tone so well at the beginning, kind of like how Breath of the Wild did with the little tutorial area before you go to the bigger world. And like I said, there's no combat. So the only thing you are doing is exploring and figuring out some, for the most part, very basic puzzles, where it's just sort of like, this door is locked, go find the battery to put in this place, or go pick up this thing that was blocking a fan or something like that. But I did totally have a moment that for me has been the thing where I went, oh, that's absolutely brilliant. Which I know, you know, it's not going to be unique to this game. It feels like a puzzle that would have been in something like Outer Wilds. But there is a puzzle, and I'm only going to really sort of spoil this one tiny puzzle, because there's hundreds of puzzles in the game. But there's one puzzle where you go to a bridge. It's called the Bridge of the Betrayed. And you find this like sort of a remnant of a, looked like a, an old statue that was there. And there's like a quote that's next to the statue that says, you know, when swords clash, go face to face, or look face to face, or something. And I spent ages trying to figure out what that was. And I was like, I'm not going to Google it. I'm not going to look stuff up. I'll just come back later. Maybe it's something that I need an upgrade for. I tried climbing on the statue's face. I tried looking at it. I did whatever. And it was, I had this moment where I was just sort of like standing to the side. And the way that this game has such a, like a visually represented day night cycle, like you can literally just stand and watch the clouds move across the sky and watch the sun change the shadows all around you. And it's in like a fairly sped up time. I think a day only takes like 20 minutes or something. Yeah. And I was sitting watching that, and the shadow literally like came over Sable and went down the mountain in front of me, the chasm in front of me. And I saw the two shadows from these two figures line up, and I was like, oh, it's that. And I just like had this moment, you know, the end of the movie when they're waiting for the breakthrough thing where the detective looks at the wall of stuff and just kind of goes like, oh, it's that. And only the main character knows what it is. And I was like, oh, I know what this is. And I ran back in and like stood and looked face to face with the statue and it opened up because I was like in the right place. And I was like, I get that that would be a very hard thing to replicate. And now everybody can go out there and just go do that. But that's the level of, I feel, you know, sort of like magic, like a guiding hand in the background that is always reserved for Nintendo, where they sort of, you don't realize you're being guided towards stuff until it happens. That I feel like that's what elevates Sable as well. And so like, that was one of the things where I was like, okay, this is next level. I also had a thing where I got lost for a while and then I fell into a cave and it was actually the cave I was supposed to find like an hour ago. And I was like, how did you even know I was here? Like I was lost for a while. And then this is the story thing. And I was like, oh, you guys have, you've really nailed like the open world side of it.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I went to that same bridge and didn't figure that out necessarily because I thought I would have to come back later. But now I'm excited to go back.
The sun wasn't in the sky at the right time.
So it's funny because I was, you know, I think we were maybe messaging before we came on and you sent me the message of the little text again. And it clicked instantly when you sent me the text.
Because you suggested like, oh, is it that? And I was like, I would never have got that.
I was like, oh my God, that gave me like the push to go back because I don't know why. I just needed to see that text again. And I've kind of figured it out. What the crack was, but yeah, you get those like you know, light bulb, those eureka moments where you figure out the puzzle, and you know, because it's so lean, because it's so streamlined in its mechanics and in its focus and in its you know, narrative drive, the catharsis comes from those moments where you overcome a particular structure and then you figure out the puzzle. You know, it feels like a journey in and of itself that some of the best, you know, platformer games have nailed, you know, years previously. But on this, the scales just, it seems so much bigger and it's just so beautiful to look at as well, which certainly helps. And I feel like it has this meditative kind of tone, I suppose, when I'm playing it. It's a very calm game. It's a very cozy game.
There's a sit button. You can just sit on cliffs.
There's a sit button. Yep. I've taken so many screenshots in it. And yeah, I think, you know, the music in particular, which obviously was a huge reason why I was interested in the first place. You know, it's performed by and you know, orchestrated by Japanese Breakfast, who I've been a fan of for a good while. They released an album this year called Jubilee. That's one of my favorites of the year. So I was looking forward to how they would translate their stylings over to video game form, because while there are a few vocal driven tracks, a lot of it is kind of ambient. You know, I think Pitchfork, I was reading the Pitchfork review of the album. I think they described it as ambient pop, which I totally get. And the way kind of changes and interacts with what you're doing at any given moment, the way it kind of accentuates the personality of each kind of camp that you come into contact with, is really been driving the emotional side of it, but also kind of complementing the aesthetic side of it. And ultimately the visuals and the music and the writing kind of comes together to make this really meditative journey that is you know, so charming to be along with.
The first time that you get a proper Japanese Breakfast, a vocal track, there's one on the opening on the main menu, but then the first time you get like another thing, it kind of does the Red Dead Redemption thing where like when you leave the camp for the first time, you leave the first area for the first time and you get your like souped up bike for the first time because you put it all together with different parts and stuff. And then you get like an actual track and it's like, okay, like this is the game. Like you've got your proper robes, you've earned them, you've put the bike together and you're off to just go wherever you want to go. You can always hold LB and just get like, it reminded me of Metal Gear Solid 4. It has that like radial ring thing around the main character so you can see where you need to go. And I was like, more games should do this. Like have the HUD disappear. And when I want to know where I'm going, I'll just bring up this little ring thing. Even stuff like that is just so sublimely handled. Like you said, the game's visuals are gorgeous, like a cel-shaded look. But with sort of like really like bright primary colors, like even when you jump and do the hover thing, Sable's in like a bright red orb that just sort of looks great. It casts against the wherever you're like, you're floating around inside some discarded ship somewhere, and it's kind of like that. But overall, like, as you can clearly tell, this game has left a hell of an impression, and I think that we were always looking forward to it to different degrees. You more than me. I was just curious. I played the demo and didn't think it really got me, but I knew there'd be more to it once I got into it in terms of the full story. And the level of writing we touched on before, but that stuff really does accentuate Sable as a character and the different people that you talk to and the different emotions that she has when she's going out on her own and stuff. So a very, very lovable game.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Something else that I played almost practically in one sitting, and this will not take that long to talk about, was Kena Bridge of Spirits. Now, I love this game, but I almost forgot that it happened because I did it in sort of, I played it a little bit at midnight when it came out, and then I was off the next day. So I played it all day. I did about an 8-hour stint, and that was it. It's done. I wish there was more to it. I wanted to go back and do the platinum, but it just wants me to collect all the little lads, the little rock men.
It sounded like you had such a good time with this. You basically being like, Josh, it's my day off. I played it for 8 hours straight. Gaming's back. And I was like, hell yeah, it is. Hell yeah, it's back. We're having a good time. I'm so pleased this is good because, you know, if people were listening to last week's podcast where we were very cautious about how Kena Bridge of Spirits was going to turn out because it seemed like some dodgy things were afoot. But then obviously the day afterwards, very, very strange. But then it came out and everyone seems to have just thoroughly enjoyed it. So I'm really pleased that that's, you know, worked for you, Scott.
I will say.
Can you please give me some kind of overview of your experience, if you can remember it? Because you did.
Oh, God, yes. So it's massively positive. And also, like, I will totally address the fact that, you know, some people are like, oh, it reminds me of PlayStation 2 platformers. I'm like, what? You mean some of the best platformers ever made? Like, you mean some of the finest entertainment experiences known to this species? Like, that whole thing where it's like, oh, it's PS2 style. Like, yeah, so like that's great. Like we don't chastise games when they're 2D old school platformers. Like there's a way to do a nice chunky platformer that for me reminded me a lot of Jack and Daxter. And so like that's for me is one of the highest praises I could possibly give it. And I do obviously acknowledge the reality that it could be a potential criticism because it's like, well, it is that level of movement that we had in Jack and Daxter. It's not kicking off walls. It's not sort of, I don't know, something more like a Mario Odyssey where you can chain different things together to move through the air more or whatever. But Kena has a very specific goal in mind. And obviously it's the first game from Ember Lab, like the motion studio, motion animation studio. And so that's the thing where I'm just like, you look at the level of the cutscenes, which are absolutely gorgeous. It's like Pixar level stuff. It's like when they did their Majora's Mask fan movie. And you look at the combat model they made. Now the combat for me is the thing that absolutely elevates it. Cause I think the platforming is fine and serviceable. It's nice. And the world looks absolutely gorgeous. There is a distinction between the level of texture detail, level of quality in the cutscenes versus the reality of the character models. There is a dip. You can tell when it goes between cutscene to in-game. But overall, the combat for the thing is the thing that made it really sing, because that's when you start getting, you know, you start with a staff and you get a bow and arrow, then you get bombs and you start chaining those things together. And it's like, you start like planting, you know, one or two bombs on two different dudes, hitting L1 to trigger them while you're throwing something at someone else. And it's just, you're nailing a headshot, you're hitting these different weak spots on different enemies. And once all that starts coming together, with liberal amounts of slow motion, nowhere near enough slow motion in games, I will say these days, but a lot of slow motion aiming. That's the thing where it really starts coming together and you can do different charge attacks and stuff like that. The only problem is that Kena herself is really thinly written. She's pretty much just the opening line that you get is just, you know, this forest is, you know, full of evil spirits. And when that happens, spirit guides are sent out to do what they can. And that's pretty much it. And you get like a little bit more, maybe about 6 to 7 hours in where she talks about what sort of motivated her when she was younger. But that's about it. Like I wanted so much more from her as a character because she's such an identifiable character. And the way that you know, you can take you know, different photo mode shots and stuff like that. So I was like, well, badass PlayStation heroine with like a bow and arrow. That reminds me of Aloy. And Aloy is so fleshed out and so well written and so confident that I wish there was more to Kena. But overall, I still would massively recommend it. It's a very breezy game. Like it's very Moorish, very easy to get through.
It's funny you mention Aloy, and I hope I'm not being reductive by, you know, comparing just two PlayStation mascots to a female with bow and arrows. But when I was looking at the gameplay, you know, especially when you mentioned like the slow-mo kind of like precision aiming and stuff.
Slow when you're aiming, yeah.
Yeah, if to me, at least visually from the few snippets that I saw, that looked very much like some of the combat in Horizon Zero Dawn, which, you know, I'm a big fan of anyway. But this was a game that, you know, I kind of cooled on after it was delayed so much. But hearing you talk about it and seeing you post about it on Twitter and stuff, some of the videos that you posted, some of the screenshots that you've shared, it just looks really gorgeous. And I feel like, you know, what you said there about Kena as a character, I think potentially, you know, it seems like the game's done pretty well critically and maybe even commercially. And we'll get a sequel hopefully sooner rather than later. Hopefully it won't take another 9 years or 10 years or whatever
to
get this one off the ground.
You would hope so. Like, yeah. The combat model, like I said, is I mean, that's the thing. There's so much to this where it's like you've accomplished so much. Like, the combat model is one of my favorite combat models in a long time. Like, it is very Horizon in regards to the bow and arrow combat. But once you realize how many different things you can chain together and the power and the unlocks that you get and the way that they all factor into each other, it does start to work like in a quite a unique way, or a way that is identifiable to that game. But they're only pulling from archetypal stuff, bow and arrows, bombs. But the way that stuff chains together is really good. And you also have the rot as well. And the rot being a collection of those little, they look like suit sprites from Studio Ghibli. And so you can customize them, you unlock different hats for them. And they can be like, you can charge them up. The meter they get is called courage. And when they have enough courage, you can send them in to distract someone or do different things like that. And their chain stuff works together. It's like, distract someone over there while I headshot a guy over here. And whatever. And it's just a lot of jumping around in slow motion, channeling different, you know, putting different things together. And
I love that.
That side of it works really, really well.
That's all I want in games, just jumping, a good jump button, which Sable has, by the way. Yes, Sable has a very good jump button. A good jump button, lots of slow-mo. Those are the two ingredients. I'm putting my fingers up to the camera. The people at home can't see this.
Those are the best two ingredients that literally every single game should have. Also, I forget which game lets you do this. I think it might be Ghost of Tsushima. But if you put the photo mode on, let me have a button that I can hold to go frame by frame whilst I'm in that mode. So I can freeze stuff and then look at it from a cool angle, because I'm the Matrix fan. I want to know the cool angle in the slow motion, and I want to do that. And then I want to see my character do the flip. That's all I want to do. I just want to see what they do. So yeah, Kena: Bridge of Spirits is absolutely gorgeous. Also, just very, very quickly, not to spoil what the ending is, but the ending message is also something that I think is quite unique. And it's not, it doesn't go the way that you maybe think it's going to, because the rest of it is quite sort of archetypal. Even the way Kena's written is a trope, ostensibly, at this point. Okay. But the way that it eventually goes, and what the rot represents and everything like that, I was quite pleasantly surprised by that. I quite like its core message. I think that it's quite... It's weird, like it's sort of like a macabre kind of message, but I really like it. I think it's very honest, and I quite like that stuff. So to shout out that as well. Last game though is something that I think you've been living on in a way that's very reminiscent of what you did back in 2019 or 18, which is Definitely. Death Stranding Director's Cut. Which you messaged me saying, "Lads, I'm ill. I've done it again. I'm back in the tutorial area. I'm delivering all the packages all over again."
Well, this is exactly why I've not been able to get around to Kena: Bridge of Spirits, because for some reason, I'm back on Death Stranding. Obviously, the director's cut is just released, and, you know, I've been wanting an excuse to go back and fully replay Death Stranding all year, essentially. And I was going to do it earlier, then this was announced, so I thought I'd wait. Now the time has come, and I'm starting from scratch. I'm doing the whole thing again. And I kind of worried, I think I mentioned this on a podcast previously, but I was a little bit worried, because while I loved it the first time through, I didn't know if I could replicate that experience on a replay, whether the kind of slow, methodical learning of exploring this world and delivering these packages was going to work when you'd already done it the first time. Thankfully, I can say it absolutely does work. And in fact, it works better than ever, because I've spent even longer in the tutorial area than I did the first time around. And as you remember,
Scott Tilford, is that even possible?
I spent a long time in there when I first played it. It's great. I've played it for 7 hours and I still haven't connected everything in that first area, so I haven't even touched the new content.
Are you
I couldn't
going
tell
for the
you
platinum?
How that plays. I'm going for the platinum, and this is why it's kind of taken so long, because I'm getting 5 stars at every center as I go, which isn't actually as difficult as I thought it was going to be, because a lot of what you learn playing Death Stranding for the first time really you know, travels with you on the second time through. So I'm doing everything, you know, I'm not getting anything damaged. I'm doing everything really efficiently. So I'm getting, you know, the maximum likes for all of my jobs and stuff. So it's, I feel like I'm making really good progress on it, but it's just great to get back into this world. You know, I'm spending a lot of time in the rest area. You know, when you go to the distribution centers and you can rest in your room, you can look at your equipment, you can play some music,
stupid poses.
Oh, and you think you can do some stupid poses. I'm even reading all of the interviews, all of the emails that you get I read some of them, but by the end I was so focused on the gameplay, because you get them when you make certain deliveries and you get certain stars right. So it got to a point where I was so focused on the deliveries that I had like 20 unread, and I just thought that I'm not going to sit in the room and do this. But now, Scott, and this is a big plus, and I need to shout out Adam Nicholas for this, because when he was going through it, he was sending me some of the songs that I use in the soundtrack, you know, and Pop Virus is an album, for instance. There's a few tracks from there, and maybe one track from there, which is really good. So I'm putting these on while I'm in the you know, like the downtime areas. I'm putting these songs on, going through my emails, and preparing for the next time I leave and venture out.
Have you become,
and it's been excellent.
Have you become a hardcore Low Roar fan? Because Hideo Kojima loves Low Roar.
I must admit, I know.
They're all right.
But
they're fine.
When Low Roar comes on and I'm playing Death Stranding, is there anything better? Does anything hit better? I don't think it does. I love those moments where you're kind of coming down a hill, you're going to your objective, one of those tracks comes on, and I'm just like, this is a good vibe. You know, it's such a good compliment with Sable, I think, because they're both games about kind of conquering the environment around you and having a mastery over that exploration. Mm-hmm. It's been really interesting playing them side by side, because I do feel like they complement them in a lot of ways. And it's funny seeing a game like of that style made by a two-person team, and then something made with the budget of Hideo Kojima and Sony, you know, which is just absolutely outrageous in the how they achieve the same goal ultimately as well.
Totally. Like, there's something so crazy about the reality that what you are doing in Death Stranding is just fetch quests, but like the way that the mechanics come together, there is a weird, strained satisfaction to it. Like, I'd lost like 3 hours, like a click of the fingers, going back to the director's cut, to the point where I literally thought it was midday and it was 4:30 in the afternoon. And I was just like, I must just be right into this because I'm doing so much. But there is something in like sort of taking the time, obviously Kojima Productions have the production budget to be able to just perfect that feel, that gameplay feel. And the Fox engine was so gorgeous in Metal Gear Solid 5. Like, the feel of Metal Gear Solid 5 was so spot on. That is still maybe arguably the best third person feeling game, like overall.
Oh,
like, it's insane. It's so spot on. And they had to go across and kind of rebuild it using the Decima engine for Death Stranding. But I feel like for the most part, they've done that. One thing to talk about though with the director's cut is that they changed some of the pacing at the beginning. In regards to, they gave you one of the walking skeletons really, really early. The thing is, if you've been living in the tutorial area, you'll not have got that. But
this is it. Yeah, I don't. I haven't got that yet. I'm not sure.
All you had to do was get to the middle area, like the one that's past the first two spots. It might even be the first one.
I'm definitely there. It's like the first distribution center you get to.
The first bigger one. It's next to a big lake that's right in front of it.
Yes, I am there.
Yeah. Right, so you take some stuff up to the satellite area, the satellite dish place, and you come back down. And then I think it's Die Hard Man who gets in touch and says, "Oh, Sam, we've given you one of the weight carrying skeletons, which is one of the late game unlocks in the original game, but they give you it now." And so that, like, it's one of the story missions anyway. Gives you it way earlier in the game to try and alleviate the little bits and pieces in the director's cut that are sort of aimed at alleviating some of the stresses of the early game. And it's interesting because at the time, Kojima was like, "Oh, it takes about 20 hours to get good, and most people won't like it." And I feel like, which is fine. I like my art not being for everyone. That's fine. But like in the director's cut, and obviously he would say it's a director's plus. There are things in here that are directly targeted at getting more people on board. And I did see a Polygon article saying that they hated the original, but they really liked the director's cut. And once it got them, once they were into it, and they got in the gameplay loop of doing the fetch quest and managing their weight distribution and holding the triggers to keep a hold of your strap so you've got all the stuff on your back and trying to maintain the balance and everything, that they got it. They got what Death Stranding was. And that is that sort of weird, you can totally hate it, but once you kind of get it and it, like it's like a vibe game. Once you kind of vibe with it, it does totally work. What do you think of some of the changes? If you've seen them, it depends how far you've got.
This is the thing, because I made a conscious decision going into it not to import my old save, because I was just wanted to do it from scratch. So I haven't had any of that stuff imposed on me. I have had one of a mission where I think I have to go to an underground bunker that is new to do a combat situation. Mm-hmm. But it, even on it, it says like you need, well, it recommends you have one of the guns, which obviously I don't have yet. So I'm going to kind of save all of that stuff for when I'm a bit more upgraded and when I can kind of tackle it that way. You know, I think the stuff that they've added, again, I haven't used it, but from the trailers, and I think it looks like a lot of fun. For me, I'm going to play it through with the original equipment, the original material, the original pace, and then once I go for the platinum, once I finish the game, that's when I'll definitely indulge in the wackiest parts.
You could have just played the original one.
Well, nah, he's what I wanted to pick up on in particular, because I could have just played the original, but I had the original at disc, so to play the director's cut on PS5, I had to reinstall, well, I didn't have to reinstall the first one, but I had to put the disc in, so it reinstalled anyway. So I have, you know, been doing some experiments, going backwards and forwards, and I feel like even without the director's cut, you know, content improvements in terms of the new you know, kind of like abilities, the new missions and stuff, the cargo cannons, I feel like it's worth it just for the 60 frames per second. I almost said that. I'm not that horny for it. I'm not that horny for it. It's 60 frames per second. The DualSense, kind of like the rumble in that, is so good when you're kind of going over the terrain. The resistance it gives you when you're holding down the triggers and trying to keep hold of your you know, backpack and stuff. So that's been great. And the performance has been solid. The boost to 4K has been excellent. I think the resolution is just amazing. The kind of like new effects in terms of
look
the water and stuff, it just looks better than ever. It plays better than ever. And for me, that was worth the upgrade. That was worth me waiting and jumping in, especially because thankfully, you know, Sony has not made the Ghost of Tsushima mistake where they're charging £25 for an upgrade for this. If you own Death Stranding on PlayStation 4, it's £5, and then you could still argue it should be free, but it's £5 at the moment. And you get the director's cut content, you get the PS5 upgrades, you even get like the digital deluxe content that was you know, originally the tie-ins, is that what you're going to say?
Yes, they added stuff like now in the director's cut by default you get the cyberpunk stuff. There's a face thing you can put on Sam that gives him like the circuitry on his cheek and stuff, and I think that it's one of the upgrades for the bike is like a cyberpunk style bike.
Some
or something
Half-Life stuff in there as well.
Yeah, there's loads of little like sort of like cross-pollination of franchises. It's just whatever Kojima likes, isn't it? I mean, they couldn't renew the Monster Energy license, so they had make Bridges Energy or whatever it's called.
That was so disappointing. Genuinely, that was so disappointing. I don't drink, you know, even sometimes I have an energy drink as a treat, but I'll get like a Red Bull. I don't even Monster. It's a treat, you know. That's how old I am, man.
Oh, it's Saturday night. Bust out the Monster. Carry on.
That's what I did on Saturday. Genuinely what I did. I got the Monster in. Don't even like it, but I thought, you know, it's I'm playing Death Stranding.
You want a Relentless, mate? That's the one with the cool logo.
I did used to drink Relentless, but I used to like the other flavors, whatever.
Relentless and Scotch eggs as a combo got me through university. But carry on.
Relentless was a big lecture kind of booster for me, and a big all nighter when you were pulling assignments out your ass library. It's been a while. But yeah, the point was I got this Monster in that I don't even like just to celebrate the game. And then I got to that point and it was like Bridges Energy. And I thought, what the hell? What the hell, Kojima, is this? You've still got your Ride with Norman Reedus advertisements in there. Why haven't you got this madness in? Like, if you're going to commit to the bit, if you're going to sell out all your integrity, do it for good. Don't come a few months later with a director's cut and pretend it wasn't there.
Commit to it. But also, like, the amount of different deals that he had to reapproach all of Sony. Someone had to reapproach all these different people and go, do you still want Cyberpunk in it? Do you still want AMD, whatever you call that, Walking Dead people? Do you still want the Norman Reedus' new show? And then Monster went, we're not fans of that. Just sort of, like, we didn't like the implementation of that. Whatever reason, I'd love to know what the reason is that it's not in. Because the idea of, like, too. Monster Hunter literally helps you save the world. Like, it wasn't that hard to spin that into an advert. Definitely. But as a final thing, a very quick thing, what are your thoughts on the story? Because I've skipped all the cutscenes. I'm not watching that toss ever again.
Fascinating that. And the story is both some of the best and worst elements of it, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff with the president and the idea.
Is that Emily Bridges Strand?
It is that. And reconnecting America, a lot of that kind of like falls flat, but I think like the horror stuff and the writing around the BTs and the Death Stranding itself, like for me, that worked the first time around. It works now. I feel like the way that those cutscenes in particular are captured, it completely sells the world. And I'm interested now going through all of the interviews and stuff to dig even deeper into exactly how it works. I feel like the story can be amazing and it can also be really bad, often in the same scene, often within the same people talking in a scene as they go through the different lines. But that inconsistency is kind of key to its charm in a way as well.
Anything with Norman Reedus as Sam Porter Bridges having to tell people that he doesn't like other people and that he's isolated, literally just saying that, just saying, no, I've given up on humanity. I know that's not for me. That, no, get someone else to deliver your packages. And just that, can you imagine a world where Hideo Kojima just lets someone else write? Just anyone, just let anyone else write. And because he's an immaculate director. Like the cinematography, the shot choice, the tone, like for the most part, really, really works. And he loves his horror stuff as well, the way all the BTs are captured, like you said. But the writing, oh my God. Like, what are we doing?
At this point, Scott, I feel like if I'm going into a Hideo Kojima production, I want it all. I want the indulgences. I can get good writing from a bunch of other sources, but I can't get mad writing. And I can't get uniquely mad writing of this level that manages to genuinely be good at times, but always be interesting at the very least, fascinating at the very
least. It's
just
that Kojima loves a monologue. It doesn't matter where you are in a scene. It doesn't matter what pace we've got going. It's just sort of someone's going to monologue about everything that's going on in their lives. And it's ridiculous. But yeah, Death Stranding remains easily one of the most like essential video games of the last few years, if not all time. And for all of these reasons and more, it's such a weird, unique thing. And I think even if you come out the other end of it like hating it, I think you have to be glad that it exists. I think it's one of those properties that it's just, you should try it for a bit. Would you also say that this is the better one to dive into? Because I would.
Oh, definitely. I think this is like the definitive version. If you're going to pick up Death Stranding, I feel like even without the director's cut stuff, which, you know, might alleviate some of the problems you had the first time around, the boost to performance, the graphical, increases, and the different options that you get are just, you know, it's the definitive version, you know, in my eyes.
No, absolutely. I think that everything that they've put into it, like there's so many different gameplay things that speed up stuff, but I think the overall vibe of Death Stranding, talking about vibe games a lot, but the overall vibe of Death Stranding is gorgeous. Like it is this thing that once you, if it clicks with you, then you will just lose hours and hours and hours to do as many fetch quests as possible, like we have. But yes, for now, this has been the wind up. Hopefully you'll still be wound up for the week and let us know what things you've been playing across the week. I might put some tweets out, so get some questions.
Please do.
Get some talking points for next week and we'll see what other stuff drops across the week. But for now, yes, this has been the wind-up. I've been Scott Tailford, joined by Josh Brown.
Goodbye. Let us know how many hours you spent in the tutorial area of Death Stranding, please.
Yes, let us know what your favorite walking skeleton is, and we'll catch you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.